Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Women of Wisdom, everyone. Today I'm blessed to have Nogley with me in the studio, and we're going to talk about why she started the company. She's a holistic healer, and she's also a money breakthrough coach, and she's a woman of many hats. I can't go into the huge list that she's given us today because she's a woman of many hats. So that being said, I'm going to bring Nora on and let her take it away.
Thanks. Hi, Wynn. Thank you so much for having me. It's an honor to be here. It's an honor to base with you for the next hour or so. So I'm very honored that you asked me to be here with you. And the majority, you're right, a woman of many hats, but I feel my deepest work right now is with helping women embody the sacredness within their own lives, no matter what circumstances are present for them individually.
And that leads me to my first question. Why did you start doing what you're doing now, and why did you want to become a money breakthrough coach and a holistic healer and a feng shui expert? And the list goes on and on and on.
Excellent question. I feel that spirit has really guided my path in each step of the way. I've known my whole life that I wanted to help people, that I wanted to help people find their wisdom and have healing so that they didn't suffer in their lives. That's something I can remember wanting to do, honestly, since I was a little girl. And in terms of, the money breakthrough coaching, what I realized a few years ago, and this was part of my own journey as well, is that I had to heal my relationship with money. I had to begin to untangle from the knot, especially, in today's society, and I think especially for women, all of the value, all of the self-value that we put on ourselves, that's completely embedded with how much money do we have, or how do we look, the appearances, what do we have, materialistically speaking, and just also the money stories we grew up with in terms of our worth. For so long, for so many of us, money is a measurement of our self-worth, of our value, and so the work I began to do was actually to disentangle from that belief system completely, to begin to really truly recognize that money is just a form of exchange. It's just a measurement of exchange, but it in no way measures our value, our worth, our potential. Because if we're all spiritual beings having a human experience here on this planet, then how could we possibly, through money, measure something that's infinite within each of us?
That is the eloquent way of saying it. Jeez, I have never heard it way. And you're right. What we grew up with as the notion of money is now not the notion now. I mean, my dad keeps teasing me. I'm coming from the generation of online bills. I mean, really, is there a bill in a paper form that with my name on it? Because we come from the generation of online. And so how does that change your company, and how does that change your perspective of money, and how does that change your perspective of healing?
I feel in my personal experience and with the women that I've worked with, what starts to happen is when you heal your relationship, your relationship, but when you heal your story with money and when you start to realize all the stories that we have, we tend to project onto money, or a lot of the stories, we project onto money. When you start to become conscious of that and bring those stories out of the shadow and into the light, then they don't rule you. They don't run you. They don't drive you unconsciously. And so all of a sudden the choices you start being able to make in your life are from a place of consciousness and light and love and groundedness versus this shadow force that's driving you, and you're making all of these unconscious decisions one after another, and then you keep wondering, why am I still in this situation, or why is this not working out for me? And I think by bringing that, the money shadow, into the light and doing that work, all of a sudden there's a tremendous amount of freedom to then really choose what it is you want to experience, what it is you want to embody in your life, in this present moment.
And for my listeners who are now stuck, who are listening to me speak and you speak, what would you recommend to them?
I think the very first step, honestly, that I would recommend is sit down and write down the stories, you know, whether it was your parents or your guardian or your grandparents, whoever had a really powerful impact in your life when you were a child in terms of how you view money and what your experience is with money and what their belief systems were. I would honestly say, and I know it might sound very simplistic, but it's incredibly powerful. Sit down with a journal for at least 4 days, you know, at least 15 to 20 minutes each day, and write out the story you grew up with, the story that was passed down to you from your parents and their parents and, you know, through the generations. So you actually are getting it out. You're physically taking that story out of unconsciousness and you're putting it down on the paper. So then all of a sudden it becomes something separate. You begin to recognize it as a story, as something that was told to you and not as part of who you are.
And for those of you who are now listening to this podcast, either live or in archives, and don't know my story changed dramatically when I was 23 years old. I'm now 28, almost 29, and that's when I decided to write my memoir, and I Come a Win, which can be found on Amazon. And this has been an incredible journey, not only with money, but with healing. And so that leads me to my next question. What would you recommend that people do when it comes to feng shui of decluttering their lives?
I think, you know, even when I was sharing before the exercise of writing down your money story, honestly, even within that, I think the most important thing is to have compassion. To have compassion for yourself when you're looking at your money story, and just as importantly, to have compassion when you begin to recognize the money story you inherited from your parents or whoever you were raised with and their belief systems of money, because they were doing the best they can with their, you know, what their consciousness was and what their stories were. And to begin to do this work and to begin to look at this and say and be self-deprecating or beating yourself up or then starting to get mad at, you know, those who passed on the money story, that doesn't serve anyone. The whole point in doing this work, I think it's the Native Americans who say when you do healing work on yourself, you're actually, the healing goes back 7 generations, and it also goes forward 7 generations. So to really, with consciousness, to come into the space when you begin to do this, when you even just, you know, Carl Jung says there's no coming to consciousness without pain. But if as the pain begins to come up, or as the anger, or the frustration, or the, oh my God, I've been living that money story for whatever, 20 years, 40 years, 60 years, to really practice self-love and to really practice compassion for your for yourself and for those around you who maybe passed down the money story. Because without love, there's no point in doing this work. Without compassion, without nourishing the soul through this, you know, what can be challenging shadow work, it just, there's no point to it if you're not going to love yourself through it.
And that being said, what is your favorite all-time story that you could share with my listeners?
Oh, my gosh. Wow. Wow, that's a big question. I think, you know, I always, when I'm doing an interview or I'm going to be in communion with someone, I always pay attention to what's coming up in my life, in my reality the day before and the morning of. And one of the things that I seem to have been thinking a lot about, I studied acting when I was in my 20s. And the acting technique I studied was Sanford Meisner, and it was living truthfully under imaginary circumstances. So the acting was all about, as the character, having genuine responses, not trying to pretend to be something or fake something or of that sort. And one of the things that I took away from my time in my 20s when I was studying and acting this way is, you know, there's philosophers throughout the centuries that talk about how life, you know, William Shakespeare and Plato, life is a stage, and you know, and it truly is that in our own lives we have, you know, our the theater of life is in our own lives. And so, you know, when you're saying one story, that was a really big experience in my life back in my 20s that really made me recognize and realize that, you know, the theater of my life, what do I choose to experience? What do I want to experience? And that what I believe and the emotions I attach to that have a very impactful effect on the day-to-day life I'm living. And so many times, especially here in the U.S., we've got this manifestor energy, you know, mindset paradigm. Just do it. Make it happen. Get out from where you are. Get to somewhere better, bigger, more. Wah, 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 you know, and it just keeps going bigger and bigger. And then the snowball that you're chasing is getting bigger and bigger. And how many of us are really grounding down and living the sacred theater of our present lives? So I know that's not like a specific story with an actual detail in it, but that's something that I've really taken with me from my 20s that I'm even experiencing more on a deeper level now, is how do you find the sacredness in your own life, no matter what our circumstances are? How do we cultivate that, and how do we put our attention to that right now in the present moment? Because the truth is, none of us are getting out of here alive, right? We're all going to die at some point, whenever that time comes. And so how do we choose to live? How do we want to, you know, the question is, how do you choose to live in this moment? Because there's no guarantee of future moments.
So that being said, and for those of you who think I'm a little bit slow today, that's because I have a million things going on, and I am about to leave here to do an interview. So for those of you who need me to pick up the pace, I can't, because I have technology problems on my end. I need to be grounded more like it. But that being said, what is your favorite book? It doesn't have to be business related either.
My favorite book. Oh my gosh. I have so many. I'm definitely a bookaholic. It must be the Sagittarius in me. I don't buy shoes. I buy books. Probably the first book that came to mind right now was The Prophet, the book of poetry by Khalil Gibran.
So, smart woman. She doesn't spend her coaching money on shoes. She spends it on books to educate herself. Smart woman. And so, could you please explain what feng shui is and how we can do it in simple terms?
Absolutely. So interestingly enough, from my acting in my 20s, create our own realities, whether it's through a play or, you know, the personality that I am, Nora, you know, that we really, we create our own realities and the stage of our life. And so when I was studying acting, of course, I was supporting myself through bartending, and that was not a very healthy environment. It was still when cigarettes were not, smoking was not outlawed in the bars and restaurants in New York City in the mid to late 90s. So I ended up, you know, I found one of the days I was in the bookstore and I found a book on feng shui and I'd never heard of it. And I started researching it and then I began to study it. And so feng shui literally in Chinese means wind and water. And the basic concept of feng shui is you're working with the flow of qi, you're working with the flow of energy in your physical surroundings, whether that's your office or your home or your school or whatever the physical environment you're living in. And so the exercise is in beginning to realize that energy flows through our home. And as creatures, unconscious creatures of habits, and it's pretty amazing to see when you go into someone's home and you understand feng shui and what's called the bagua, the map that you lay over someone's floor plan, you know, to see where clutter is collecting, to see where there might be a water leak, is that in the wealth corner? So, you know, we really, you know, for so long we've all grown up with the belief system that we are victims of our physical circumstances. And what feng shui, at least acting and feng shui began, is that we're actually architects of our physical circumstances, in particular our physical environments that we've created. And so on a subconscious level, we create whatever blocks are going in within us emotionally and spiritually, we recreate those in our outer environment. So when I go in and I do, you know, someone's feng shui or even if I'm, you know, able to do it over the phone, I can usually see where the blocks are. And so the work of feng shui is then to begin to release those blocks so that the energy, so the qi can begin to flow more smoothly through that physical space and also through the gua that it's activating, whether it's health or wealth or marriage or helpful people, career, that sort of thing.
Oh, my God. That sounds to me so fascinating. And, of course, I am a holistic being myself. For those of you who do not know, I try to stay away from medications, surprise, with my cerebral palsy. I really take medication except for the allergy medication, but I try to heal my body holistically the best I can because it's what we put in our bodies doesn't sit well with my body anymore. I mean, it's interesting. And I'm going to talk to Noah about this. It's interesting how much we rely on medication as a company. And so give me your opinion on that, Noah.
You know, I very much feel like I'm in alignment with you, Wynn, in terms of that. You know, I have two boys. I have two sons. They're 11 and 8 years old. And when my youngest son was a baby at 4 months old, he developed severe eczema, like life-altering type of eczema, not just like a patch here or there. He was covered from head to toe. He went from, he was scratching and itchy 100% all every day. He went from 90th percentile in height and weight down to, I think it was less than 10% growing. He stopped developing. I mean, it was just really awful. And, you know, I did everything naturally and kind of nothing was really budging so much. And, you know, and I even was open at that point then because I was desperate to the, you know, traditional Western medicine, to the allopathic cures and I didn't find any solutions there, and I was determined. I just kept going, and it was actually through a path of also looking at what we were eating and working with supplements to cleanse and detox the system, and then in particular, the deepest level of healing came through something that we did called sequential homeopathy. So it was a form of homeopathy that basically you peel away the layers of the onion of whatever the traumas have been in the life, which, you know, technically weren't that many. He was a baby still. And then you begin to do the work on the deeper levels, which are the miasms. In homeopathy, they're called miasms. And that is where we really got to the root of the discordance. And he's healed. He, you know, the Western world-renowned eczema expert told me, you know, he's never going to outgrow this. He proceeded to list off all the things my son would never be able to do because of his eczema. And in my mind, I said, no, I refuse to accept your diagnosis and your limiting belief system. I said that, of course, within myself. I didn't say that out loud. And he's completely eczema-free now. So I feel very much in exhausting all avenues of allowing the body to heal itself naturally and supporting the body. I think we've forgotten that our body has an innate intelligence within it, that if we just help it and support it and even just give it space to do the what it needs to do and what it can do, it will do it. You know, is there a time and space for regular medicine? Absolutely, of course. But I think to have a harmonious relationship between the holistic and the natural and then the allopathic is very important. And that's where I think so many people have gotten off balance. You know, if I were to get into a car accident, would homeopathy help me if I need surgery? Absolutely not. I need the surgery, and I have a deep respect for that. But for especially the day-to-day things, what we put in our bodies and, you know, what we choose to focus on even in a healthy way, I feel that we're co-creators with the health of our bodies. So, you know, the holistic medicine and the holistic eating is very important in my opinion and my experience.
And I'm shocked that your son is now over his eczema. God, that starts to make me cry because we're so used to, when I say, look, I'm on no medication whatsoever, and for the exceptions of a few vitamin D and the allergy medication, people look at me like I have two heads. People literally look at me like I have two heads because they automatically assume woman in a walker, woman who uses assistive devices with cerebral palsy. She's on a shitload of medications, and it's like, no, I'm not on a shitload of medications. I treat my body as if it were a typical body, and you wouldn't put any little ounce of hormones into it, whereas people are like, I have people now 9 times out of 10 self-diagnose themselves from what they see on TV at 8 o'clock in the morning. Don't get me started. So I am very in tune with what you're saying as far as feng shui and keeping our bodies like a temple.
Yes.
And so what, through this process, what has been your best memory doing all this and helping others?
I think I've gotten to the point, and it's still a daily cultivation, but not that I don't have rough days. You know, I think one of the misconceptions is when you do this work, or, you know, you look at people who have a higher platform. You look at like Deepak Chopra or even Oprah, and I think the assumption is, oh, they've gotten to this space, their life is perfect, or everything goes great, or they don't have any problems. And that's such a misconception. Like, we're all human beings, and things affect us, and things come up in order to be healed, and we all have difficulties in our life, which allow us the opportunity to grow. Like, I'm never growing when everything's going great in my life. You know, I'm always challenges that you know, call me to growth, to spiritual growth and emotional growth, and even, you know, physical growth in terms of becoming healthier. And so, you know, it's interesting. A couple of weeks ago, my husband and I went away on a vacation without the kids. We hadn't done that in years. And we went to this really nice hotel, and, you know, I feel very blessed and grateful that I could do it, and it was wonderful. And I have to say that was the first time in my life I'm just kind of sitting at the hotel, and it didn't feel like it was any different than my life at home. Like, I wasn't like, oh, yeah, I'm on vacation. This is amazing. This is just so great, so much better than that life at home I'm leaving. And after two or three days, there was a part of me that was like, well, I just want to go home. And the reason why I'm sharing that as my greatest memory is I think I'm just getting to a point where I'm able to consciously cultivate that sacredness in my own life. My home is paradise, and my relationship, you know, with my husband and my children, not that I don't have challenges, but overall they're just wonderful, and there's harmony in my home, and there's a sacredness there, so I don't have to get away from it. And that was a really big aha moment for me, even just recently, to be able to recognize that I'm not just talking the talk, I'm walking the walk of what I'm helping, you know, particular women journey through. And you know, life doesn't wait for you if you're in this awesome, you know, in the age of social media and Instagram, and look, I'm here and my life is great in this exotic place. And it's like, life is sacred, life is beautiful, life is orgasmic in the present moment if we just ground down and begin to recognize the sacredness of our own lives. So that was kind of my biggest aha, and recently my biggest memory of just an awareness of a deeper, being in a deeper space myself.
So what, that being said, and I normally don't ask this question, well, other people, maybe I should, but what would you recommend to people that are so driven by technology? How would you recommend that we stop and smell the roses?
You know, it's true, because we're all so driven by it. And I've really been contemplating that. It's an excellent question, Wynn, and I've been contemplating it a lot lately because, you know, especially when you have a home-based office or business, and, you know, a lot of my referrals come through social media and people I get to know on social media, and then they do a reading with me and that sort of thing. You know, the drive is like, oh, if I'm not on social media, something's being lost. If I'm not on social media, something's being lost. And you know, I think there's this unconscious shadow drive that if we're not on social media, whether we're commenting or replying to someone else's commenting or liking something else, then we're not being, and the deeper cycle of that statement, if we're not being seen, then is, if we're not seen, do we exist? And I know that's getting very esoteric and we can go really deep with that, but, you know, to realize that, for me at least, to have realized that there was an aspect of that in the unconscious drive has allowed me to begin to step back, that I'm still who I am. I still exist. I still have my sacred relationships, you know, in my physical world, and even with those that I have on social media, even if I'm not on it 24/7, even if I'm not commenting or liking everything. So putting healthy boundaries in place, I feel I've gotten to the point, is really important. I literally turn my phone off. I turn my computer off. I turn my iPad off. I literally, and I'm not like to sleep, like close the screen. I mean, I power everything down at about 9 o'clock every night, and I don't power it on until 8 o'clock in the morning. I really give myself that space of being completely disconnected from social media, because it's almost, you know, I'm sure as you've seen, and, you know, there's so much talk about it, there's there's an addiction to it out there. But I'm really, and this is because of my own experience too, I really think the addiction stems from wanting to be seen, because we, at the end of the day, we all want to be seen. And that's really on a deeper soul level, but it's coming across on this superficial level. And that's what's driving, I believe, so many of us. And then the fear that if we're not seen, then how do we exist, or how will we survive?
Exactly. Exactly. You said it in a beautiful nutshell, and I wanted to ask that question of you, and I wanted to ask that question of my viewers. Just, and here's the takeaway of Women of Wisdom today. Just think about having a couple minutes without technology, you guys. I do it, and I do it, and I know it's hard for some of you, and I know it's hard for me, and it, but as a friend of mine put it, and I'm going to use this quote, and then I'm going to ask Nora to give her website and stuff like that, because obviously we talk about technology. We both have websites, and we're both on Facebook. But the quote is, technology is only as invasive as you make it. And I believe that quote so strongly that I've been trying my hardest technology and off Facebook, but people won't let me go because they somehow like my story. But that being said, from a holistic point of view, what should we do about this invasive species called Facebook?
I think I'm just pausing because I really want to tune into this. I don't think Facebook is any different, or social media is any different than, you know, like what we were speaking about before in terms of being holistic and being healthy. You know, we have to look at what the addiction is, you know, whether the addiction is sugar, or whether the addiction is alcohol, or whether the addiction is, you know, social media, Facebook, or whatever it is. We have to look and see what, you know, what's the underlying driving force? Because if we don't address that, and for society as a whole, you know, collectively, it can be one thing, and then there can be also a much deeper, you know, personal reason for each of us. And so I think it's important that each of us ask ourselves that question. You know, what is it that's driving me with allowing Facebook, or like you said, that quote is so perfect, you know, allowing something to be invasive in my life. Because even actually, you know, even as women, or, you know, just as people, it's like, where am I lacking boundaries? Am I giving too much of my energy away, or am I letting people, you know, take advantage of me in this way or that way, or am I letting money seep out because I'm not tracking my money? I mean, you can just kind of see how, you know, we're not in harmony, where we're not in balance. We have to look and see why our, you know, our responsibility, our part in letting that invasiveness come into our ecosystem, whether it's our spiritual ecosystem, our physical ecosystem, our emotional ecosystem, et cetera. And I think that's something that each one of us needs to answer individually for ourselves. But I think it's a really important question in today's world, because the same can be true of TV. You know, I have someone in my family who I love dearly, and she loves watching all of the CSI unit shows and all the shows on the cops and the cases and the medical examiners and the murders and all this stuff. And I you know, one day I just looked at her and I said, you know, there's an aspect of you that's kind of cultivating being a victim, you know, because so much of those shows, obviously somebody dies at the hands of someone else and that sort of thing. And I'm like, you know, we need to look at those places in our life where, and look at it almost, you know, yes, there's a practical level of what's going on, but look at it, be willing to look at it metaphorically, be willing to look at it symbolically and see what it represents. So back to what you were saying, Lynn, about the invasiveness, is like wherever we're allowing that invasiveness into our lives, you know, is where we each need to take a much deeper look and see why we're engaged in that relationship with that invasiveness, if that makes sense.
That makes sense. Now, where can people find you?
So, as you said, I'm on Facebook, Nora Cabrera. I'm on Instagram as well. But I'm the main place, obviously, that has all those social media links and has, you know, description of the services I offer right now is my website, www.noracabrera, NoraCabrera.com.
And again, I appreciate your fascinating stories and sharing with my listeners how you see life and what your life experiences and doing all this holistic healing work.
I am so honored to be here, as I said at the beginning, Lynn, and you're an inspiration and you're a testimony to living your truth and your passion and your dreams. And so thank you so much for inviting me on. I'm really honored.
Thank you. And again, you guys, because I'm having issues with Blog Talk, we're actually switching systems to have a call-in number, but it will be hosted on Podcast Garden, and or it will be uploaded to some sort of our iTunes feed. So again, you can tag to me on iTunes if you guys see fit, or you can catch the archive of this Blog Talk show in January, but I'm still going to be doing Wins the Women of Wisdom, just in a completely different format and hopefully a little bit easier. So if you guys can help me and figure this one out, I would be forever grateful. I mean, I've asked a couple people, but they haven't necessarily come out of the woodwork to say, yes, Lynn, we can help you. But if you guys know any brilliant ideas on how to make Wins the Women of Wisdom a bigger, better thing, let me know. I'm on Facebook, and my website is Wynn Charles, Wynn Charles, at wix.com/WynnCharles. And that is my website. And again, I'm on Facebook, or if it's easier, just Google my name, and then you can find me all over the place. So if you guys have any brilliant ideas for Women of Wisdom, or you can even shoot me an email about topic ideas, and I'm open to topic ideas. And if you guys have any brilliant ideas on how to make this better, please let me know. And I appreciate all my love and support for Women of Wisdom, and I hope you enjoyed another fabulous episode.